All right, so everybody loves a good personality quiz, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
But today we're looking at one that's a little bit different.
Okay.
It's all about anthroposophy.
All right.
So this is actually a mini quiz from the Spiritual Seek. I think a lot of our listeners are probably already familiar with
Yeah,
that.
definitely.
But we're going to take this opportunity to like really do a deep dive
Yeah.
into the quiz itself.
Okay.
So for those who aren't familiar with anthroposophy, it's basically like a philosophy that was founded by Rudolf Steiner.
Right.
And it kind of like blends spirituality and a really unique understanding of human potential.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating system.
Yeah, so it actually touches on a lot of different areas. So like education, agriculture, medicine, art, like it's a whole world.
Definitely a whole world.
Yeah, so we're going to go through each of the six questions
Okay.
and we'll look at the correct answer.
Okay.
And then we'll really dig into like why it's correct from like an anthroposophical perspective.
Let's
All right, so question one kind of jumps right into the heart of anthroposophy.
Okay.
It says, what is the primary goal of anthroposophy as founded by Rudolf Steiner?
All right.
And we've got three options here.
Okay.
A, to promote scientific materialism and freedom from religious dogma.
Okay.
B, to develop a deeper understanding of the spiritual world through personal experience.
Okay.
Or C, to establish a new religion based on universal principles.
Gotcha.
So I can see how somebody, coming to anthroposophy for the first time might be drawn to A,
Yeah.
like, wanting to ground things in science and move away from strict religious rules.
Right, definitely. But anthroposophy isn't about rejecting spirituality.
Okay.
It's more about finding a balance. It
Yeah.
values like individual freedom and critical thinking,
Okay.
but it also acknowledges that there's this spiritual reality out there that we can access through like inner development and stuff.
Okay.
So A isn't really hitting the mark.
So what about C then? It seems like anthroposophy, does kind of offer this like pretty comprehensive worldview, almost like a spiritual system in and of itself.
Right, but it doesn't want to replace existing religions.
Okay.
It's more about enriching our understanding of the spiritual dimension that exists alongside and within everything else.
Yeah.
So the real focus is on that personal journey of discovery,
Yeah. Okay.
which leads us to the correct answer B, to develop a deeper understanding of the spiritual world through personal experience.
Okay, so it's not about following a set dogma.
Right.
It's about, each individual kind of cultivating their own path to spiritual understanding.
Exactly. Anthroposophy wants us to engage with the spiritual world directly, not just through belief or intellectual concepts,
Yeah.
but through our own experiences and observations.
I like that it's an active approach to spirituality rather than a passive one.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to question two, which tackles a topic that often sparks a lot of debate.
Oh boy.
Reincarnation. So the question is, what significance does reincarnation hold in anthroposophical belief?
All right.
And our options are A, reincarnation is dismissed as irrelevant and unscientific.
Okay.
B, reincarnation plays a crucial role in understanding human evolution and karma.
Gotcha.
Or C, reincarnation happens randomly without purpose and has no spiritual value.
Okay.
So knowing what we do about anthroposophy already, I think we can safely rule out A.
Definitely, anthroposophy embraces spiritual concepts,
Yeah.
and reincarnation is seen as a key part of like human evolution. It's not just dismissed as irrelevant.
But what about C? Is there a sense that reincarnation could just be this random cycle without any real purpose?
Well, anthroposophy sees reincarnation as anything but random. It's
Better.
woven into the fabric of karma,
Yeah.
the idea that our actions have consequences that ripple out across lifetimes. So the correct answer is B, reincarnation plays a crucial role in understanding human evolution and karma.
So it's not just that we keep coming back,
Right.
but each life is connected to the others,
Yeah.
building on past experiences and influencing future ones.
Exactly. Anthroposophists believe that each lifetime is an opportunity for growth learning and karmic balancing.
Wow. That really adds a whole new dimension to the idea of personal responsibility, doesn't it?
It does.
If our actions in this life have implications for future lives, it makes you think twice about how you're living in the here and now.
Yeah, for sure. It encourages us to think about the long-term consequences of our choices and how they might play out over multiple lifetimes.
All right, on to question three, which delves into a really fascinating area. How does anthroposophy approach medicine?
Okay.
Our options are A, it rejects conventional medicine entirely. B, it combines conventional medical practices with holistic therapies based on spiritual insights.
Okay.
Or C, It relies solely on herbal and homeopathic remedies.
Gotcha.
Now, I know some people might think anthroposophy is all about alternative medicine.
Right.
So they might be tempted by A or C.
Yeah. It's true that anthroposophy values natural healing and holistic well-being,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't reject conventional medicine outright.
Okay.
It's more about integrating different approaches to create a truly comprehensive system of healthcare.
So it's about finding the best of both worlds.
Exactly. Anthroposophic medicine recognizes the value of conventional treatments.
Okay.
While also incorporating therapies that address the patient's emotional and spiritual needs.
Mm-hmm.
This leads us to the correct answer, B. It combines conventional medical practices with holistic therapies based on spiritual insights.
So what might that look like in practice?
Sure.
Can you give us an example of how an anthroposophic approach to medicine might differ from what we typically experience?
Well, imagine someone's dealing with like a chronic illness.
Okay.
An anthroposophic doctor, in addition to maybe prescribing conventional medications,
hmm.
might also recommend artistic therapies, like painting or music therapy, to support the patient's emotional and spiritual well-being. Or they might suggest specific dietary changes based on the patient's individual needs.
So it's about addressing the whole person, not just the physical symptoms.
Right.
I can see how that aligns with anthroposophy's emphasis on interconnectedness.
Definitely.
All right. Question number four brings us to a topic that's pretty unique to anthroposophy.
Okay.
Eurythmy.
All right.
The question asks, what is eurythmy in the context of anthroposophy?
Gotcha.
Our options are A type of meditation practice focused on silence.
Okay.
B, a form of expressive movement art that makes speech visible.
Right.
Or C, a dietary regimen promoting physical health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to admit, when I first heard about eurythmy, I was completely baffled.
Yeah.
Making speech visible through movement.
It sounds a bit mysterious, doesn't it?
It really does. What does that even mean?
But it's actually a really fascinating art form.
Okay.
And you're right. The correct answer is B, a form of expressive movement art that makes speech visible.
Okay. You have to paint a picture for us here. How does eurythmy actually work?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
Well, imagine a dancer moving gracefully.
Yeah.
And their movements are flowing and changing in response to spoken words or music.
Okay.
Each sound, each vowel and consonant has a corresponding movement quality.
Wow.
So as the performer moves, they're essentially embodying the sounds and rhythms of language through their body.
It's like they're sculpting the air with their movements, bringing sound to life in a visual way.
Exactly. It's a beautiful and expressive art form that engages both the body and the soul.
I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah.
I'll have to see a eurythmy performance sometime to really understand it.
I highly recommend it.
All right, let's move on to question five, which asks, which educational approach is directly influenced by anthroposophical principles?
Okay.
Our options are A, Montessori method,
mm-hmm.
B, Waldorf education,
right.
Or C, Feuerstein method.
Gotcha.
This one's a bit of a giveaway, right?
Yeah, I think many of our listeners will know this one.
Yeah.
While all of those are great educational approaches. Only one is rooted in anthroposophy, and that's B. Waldorf education.
Exactly. Waldorf schools, also known as Steiner schools, are known for their unique approach to education.
Right.
Emphasizing holistic development and a deep connection with the arts and nature.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit more about what makes Waldorf education so distinctive?
Well, Waldorf schools are designed to nurture not only the intellect, but also the child's imagination, creativity, and emotional intelligence.
Right.
They use a curriculum that's carefully aligned with the developmental stages of childhood, encouraging hands-on learning, artistic expression, and a reverence for the natural world.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're creating a really rich and engaging learning environment.
Yeah, and I can definitely see how that aligns with anthroposophy's focus on the whole person and the interconnectedness of everything.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've made it to our final question, which explores the role of art in anthroposophical practice.
Right.
It asks, what role does art play in anthroposophical practice?
Okay.
The choices are A, art is regarded as a distraction from one's spiritual path. B, art serves as a medium for expressing spiritual truths and enhancing consciousness.
Gotcha.
Or C, art is purely for entertainment purposes.
Okay.
Now, considering how important creativity seems to be in anthroposophy, I doubt A is the answer.
Yeah, you're on the right track.
Yeah.
Anthroposophy sees art as much more than just a distraction or a form of entertainment.
Okay.
It's a powerful tool for exploring and expressing spiritual truths.
So the answer is B, right?
Yep.
Art serves as a medium for expressing spiritual truths and enhancing consciousness.
Exactly.
Can you elaborate on why art is so highly valued in anthroposophy?
Well, anthroposophy recognizes that art has the power to touch us on like a deeper level than logic or reason alone can. It can evoke emotions, spark our imaginations, and even provide glimpses into spiritual realities.
Yeah.
It's a way of connecting with something beyond the everyday world.
It's like art acts as a bridge between the material and the spiritual.
Exactly. And this isn't limited to visual art.
Okay.
Remember Eurythmy. Even movement can be a form of art that deepens our understanding of ourselves and the universe.
Yeah.
In Anthroposophy, art isn't just something we admire from afar. It's something we actively engage with as a pathway to greater awareness and spiritual growth.
That's such a beautiful way to think about art. It's not just about aesthetics.
Right.
But about transformation and connection.
Exactly.
So there you have it. We've made it through all six questions of the Spiritual Seeks Anthroposophy quiz.
How did you, were there any surprises along the way?
I know I learned a few things. But remember, this quiz just scratches the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Anthroposophy is a vast and complex field with so much more to explore.
It is.
What's fascinating is how these seemingly abstract ideas can actually have very practical applications in our lives.
Yeah, that's a great point. In part two, after a quick break, we'll delve into how these anthroposophical principles can be applied to everyday life. Don't go anywhere. It's amazing how even a simple quiz can, like, get you thinking differently about the world.
It really is. And as we move into the practical side of things, I'm especially curious about the concept of reincarnation.
Yeah.
The quiz touched on its importance, but I'd love to explore how this belief might influence an anthroposophist's everyday life.
Well, imagine viewing every interaction, every decision through the lens of multiple lifetimes. It shifts your perspective, doesn't it?
It does.
It encourages a certain level of mindfulness, knowing that our actions have far-reaching consequences.
So it's not just about this one life, but about the ongoing evolution of the soul over many lifetimes.
Right.
How might that impact decision-making, for example?
If we truly believe that our actions have karmic repercussions that extend beyond our current existence, it might make us more thoughtful and compassionate in our choices.
Mm-hmm.
We might be more inclined to act in ways that benefit not just ourselves, but also the greater good, knowing that we're all interconnected in this grand journey of the soul.
It's like expanding the scope of our responsibility. We're not just accountable to ourselves in this moment, but to a larger tapestry of existence. That's a powerful concept.
It is. And it doesn't have to be about, like, grand gestures or sweeping changes. Even small everyday actions can take on new meaning when viewed through this lens.
That makes sense. It's about bringing that awareness and intention to every moment, recognizing the ripple effects of our choices. Now, I'm also curious about how Anthroposophy's emphasis on the spiritual world influences how someone might see the world around them.
It's like gaining a new sense, a spiritual perception that allows you to see beyond the surface of things.
Okay.
Suddenly, nature becomes infused with a deeper meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a collection of plants and animals, but a reflection of the spiritual forces that shape and animate everything.
So instead of just seeing a tree, you might see a symbol of growth, interconnectedness, or even a manifestation of a spiritual being.
Precisely. And that awareness can cultivate a deep sense of reverence and gratitude for the natural world. It encourages us to treat the earth with respect, recognizing it as a sacred and interconnected web of life.
It's like shifting from a purely material worldview to one that sees the spiritual essence within all things. And it makes you wonder, if we started seeing the world through this lens, how might it change our relationship with the environment?
That's a crucial question. If we truly recognize the spiritual dimension of nature, perhaps we would be less likely to exploit and destroy it. We might approach environmental issues with a greater sense of urgency and responsibility, understanding that we're not just harming the planet, but also ourselves and future generations.
It's a call for a more holistic and interconnected approach to environmental stewardship. Now, beyond our relationship with nature, I'm curious about how these spiritual insights might impact our relationships with other people.
Imagine seeing the spark of the divine in every person you encounter. It shifts the way you interact, doesn't it?
It does.
It encourages you to look beyond superficial differences and recognize the shared humanity that binds us all together.
So instead of judging or labeling others, you're more likely to approach them with compassion and understanding.
Exactly. And that understanding can lead to more meaningful connections and a greater sense of unity. After all, if we believe that we're all on this journey of soul evolution together, it makes sense to support and uplift each other, even amidst our differences.
It's about seeing each person as a fellow traveler on this spiritual path, recognizing that everyone is at a different stage in their journey.
Precisely. And it challenges us to be more patient and forgiving, both with ourselves and with others. Now, shifting gears a bit, let's talk about the practical applications of anthroposophy in fields like education and agriculture.
Good.
We've already touched on Waldorf education, but I'd love to explore biodynamic farming, which was mentioned in the quiz.
Biodynamic farming is definitely intriguing. It seems to go beyond just organic practices, incorporating a whole spiritual dimension into agriculture. Can you elaborate on that?
In biodynamic farming, the farm is viewed as a living organism, a self-sustaining ecosystem where all the elements are interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
It's about working with nature's rhythms and cycles, respecting the interplay of soil, plants, animals, and even the celestial bodies.
So it's not just about maximizing yields, but about creating a harmonious balance within the entire farm system.
Exactly. Biodynamic farmers use specific preparations made from natural materials to enhance soil fertility and plant health. They pay close attention to the phases of the moon and other cosmic influences, believing that these rhythms play a significant role in the growth and vitality of crops.
It's fascinating how they're integrating these ancient wisdom traditions with modern agricultural practices. And it's another great example of how anthroposophy bridges the gap between the spiritual and the practical.
Indeed. And biodynamic farming also emphasizes the importance of creating a closed-loop system where waste is minimized and resources are recycled. This aligns with anthroposophy's focus on sustainability and responsible stewardship of the earth.
It's about creating a truly sustainable agricultural system that nourishes not just our bodies, but also the planet as a whole. I'm starting to see how these anthroposophical principles, which might seem abstract at first glance, can actually have very tangible and practical applications in the real world.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so compelling. It's not just a philosophy to be studied, but a way of life to be lived. It invites us to engage with the world in a more conscious and mindful way, recognizing the interconnectedness of all things and our role in creating a more harmonious and sustainable future.
It's about bringing those spiritual insights down to earth and weaving them into the fabric of our daily lives.
Mm.
I'm curious, if someone is intrigued by these ideas,
mm-hmm.
what are some practical ways they can begin to incorporate anthroposophical principles into their own lives?
That's a great question, and one we'll explore in more detail in part three. Stay with us as we delve into some simple yet powerful practices that can help you bring a little bit of anthroposophy into your everyday life.
So we've talked about, you know, the big ideas of anthroposophy,
right?
From reincarnation to biodynamic farming.
Mm-hmm.
But how can we actually like bring this wisdom into our daily lives?
Yeah.
It can feel kind of overwhelming.
It's true. These concepts can seem vast, but the beauty of anthroposophy is that it's ultimately about individual action. Even small shifts in perspective and simple practices can make a difference.
So we don't have to like upend our entire lives to start living more in alignment with these principles?
Not at all.
Yeah.
One of the most accessible practices is cultivating mindfulness in everyday activities.
Okay.
Anthroposophy encourages us to engage with the world consciously and intentionally rather than just rushing through life on autopilot.
So it's about being fully present in each moment, even in seemingly mundane tasks.
Right.
Like how would that apply to something like, say, washing the dishes?
Instead of letting your mind wander while you scrub, try bringing your full attention to the experience.
Okay.
Feel the warmth of the water, the texture of the plates, the scent of the soap.
Mm.
Engage your senses and be completely present in that moment.
Yeah.
It's a simple practice, but it can have a profound impact on your sense of awareness and well-being.
It's like turning a chore into a meditation.
Exactly.
And I can see how that ties into the broader anthroposophical idea of finding the spiritual in the everyday.
Mm.
It's not just about grand rituals or retreats.
Yeah.
It's about infusing even the simplest actions with intention and awareness.
Absolutely. And as we cultivate this mindfulness, we might find ourselves becoming more attuned to the interconnectedness of things.
Okay.
We might start noticing the subtle ways our actions impact the world around us.
Which brings us to relationships.
Yeah.
We talked earlier about seeing the divine spark in everyone.
Right.
But how do we actually put that into practice in our interactions with others?
One powerful way is to approach every conversation with a sense of openness and curiosity.
Okay.
Instead of letting our preconceived notions or judgments cloud our perception,
mm-hmm.
we can try to truly listen to the other person.
Yeah.
To understand their perspective, even if we don't agree with it.
It's about cultivating empathy and compassion, even in challenging situations.
Exactly.
It's easy to fall into the trap of wanting to be right or to convince someone of our viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the real growth comes from simply listening and trying to understand.
Precisely. And that requires a willingness to set aside our ego and to recognize that we don't have all the answers.
Right.
It's about approaching each interaction as an opportunity to learn and grow, both individually and together.
It's about seeing each person as a mirror, reflecting back to us aspects of ourselves that we might not be aware of.
Yeah.
And speaking of reflections, we can't forget about art,
right?
Which plays such a central role in anthroposophy.
Mm-hmm.
How can we weave art into our lives in a way that nourishes our souls?
Yeah.
Do we all need to become painters or musicians?
Not necessarily. The key is to approach art with a sense of receptivity and openness.
Okay.
Allowing ourselves to be moved and inspired by the beauty and creativity that surrounds us.
So it's less about creating art and more about experiencing it.
Both are valuable, but sometimes we get so caught up in the idea of creating art that we forget to simply enjoy it.
Yeah, that's true.
Visit a museum, attend a concert, read poetry, watch a dance performance.
Mm.
Allow yourself to be swept away by the artistry and allow it to spark your own creative energy.
It's about remembering that art is a language that speaks to our souls. A language that can transcend words and connect us to something deeper within ourselves and the world around us.
Exactly. And you might be surprised by what you discover about yourself and the world through those experiences.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to touch on one more essential element of anthroposophy.
Yeah.
Our relationship with nature.
Right.
We talk about the spiritual dimension of the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
But how can we practically nurture that connection in our daily lives?
One of the simplest and most powerful practices is to spend time in nature regularly.
Okay.
Even a few minutes each day can make a difference.
Oh.
Go for a walk in the park, sit by a lake, listen to the birds sing.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to be present to the beauty and wonder of the natural world.
It's about stepping outside of our busy minds mm-hmm. and into the rhythm of nature, allowing ourselves to be restored and revitalized by its presence.
Exactly. And as we connect with nature, we might start to notice the wisdom and teachings it offers.
Mm.
We might find that nature has a way of mirroring back to us our own inner states, helping us to connect with our intuition and our sense of belonging to something larger than ourselves.
It's about recognizing that we are part of nature, not separate from it.
Right.
And that awareness can be deeply transformative, both individually and collectively.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today, from the philosophical underpinnings of anthroposophy to practical ways to bring these principles into our lives.
It's been a rich exploration, and I hope our listeners feel inspired to continue their own deep dive into this fascinating world.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I'd love to leave our listeners with a final thought. If you're intrigued by what you've heard today, I encourage you to choose one of the practices we've discussed and try it out in your own life this week. Pay attention to how it feels, how it shifts your perspective, and how it impacts your interactions with the world around you. You might be surprised by what you discover.
Beautifully said. The beauty of anthroposophy lies not in abstract theories, but in the lived experience. It's an invitation to continually explore, discover, and grow.
And with that, we'll bring this deep dive to a close. A huge thank you to our expert for sharing their insights and wisdom.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy to delve into these ideas together.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. We hope you'll continue to dive deep into whatever sparks your curiosity and illuminates your path. Until next time, keep exploring.